Hey guys, I'm going to tell you something a little personal. I got my labs done by a company called Blokes and found out that maybe they could help me. In order to keep grinding hard, I figured it was time for a check under the hood. Blokes helped me do that. They sent someone to my home for a blood draw. Never seen that many vials. I had a consultation with a clinician to go over the results, and they sent me a 40-page functional report. We went through stress markers, hormone markers, did a full thyroid workup, looked at heart health, and a lot more. We came up with a plan personalized to me based on my biomarkers and my goals. They sent me supplements and therapies to my door. Blokes looks at health differently than any doctor I've ever been to before. It's a proactive approach. It's in-depth. I think they are disrupting the sick care system, and I'm happy to support companies like them. Blokes is doing all they can to keep me hammering day after day. They're offering you 20% off labs if you use code CAM at checkout. Blokes.co/CAM. That's Blokes.co/CAM for 20% off your labs. Hoyt Archery has been my bow hunting sponsor since 2005. And personally, I really don't care what bow you shoot, what brand it is. I just hope that you have the same level of confidence in your equipment as I have in mine. Because I know if I get one opportunity with my Hoyt, it's going to pay off.
Every step I take, I move my truth. Every time they tell me stop, I use. Every comment, hate that makes my fuel. Gather up my energy and boom. I hear them talking, saying the way that I move is so reckless. That is a part of my mind I've been blessed with. Giving my blood so I am relentless.
All right, this is the Keep Hammering Collective. As you know, I'm Cam Haynes, but also here with me is James G. Williams.
Your better choice, I guess, wouldn't get on today, so here I am.
Who, Tanner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So sent me some ideas for a solo podcast, and I said, I'm going to need somebody to volley these questions back and forth. And I said, since Tanner won't do it, that means you, James.
So here I am. So we'll see how I do.
And let's get the backstory. You're so you work for me full time. You moved from Bozeman, Montana.
Yep. Yeah, just moved out here like a month ago.
And what's, I mean, I think everybody's been wondering, what does the G stand for?
Greg.
Oh, man. That is so unique.
That is not my middle name, but I think we'll leave it at that.
It's not Greg?
Yeah.
Gag?
Gideon.
Gideon?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that from like a movie or something? The Hobbit or?
What? Yeah, my parents were huge
Hobbit fans. Not a great start to this podcast, I'll say.
Oh, man.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
I don't think I had a finished thought.
Okay. All right.
No, I think my brother picked my name, and I guess he chose Gideon. So,
is that how it's done nowadays? Is it the new generation? Is the siblings pick the names?
Yeah, yeah,
that's cool. Yeah. It's empowering.
I would have my younger brother picked my name, so
that makes it tougher. So yeah, no name for a while. Yeah, I mean, if my siblings would have picked my name, it would have been like idiot. So
I think that was his second choice.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, so James Gideon Williams.
Yeah, that's me.
And I was wondering yesterday, but I was wondering just in general, your work is like so good, so well done, and it doesn't get hardly any likes. Why is that?
I mean,
if I do a selfie, it'll crush your like edited everything. How come?
Well, I mean, we know the answer to that. Obviously, I don't know what I'm doing, and you're 10 times better than I am. So
right, okay,
yeah,
that's what I was thinking. That's why this should be an internship. Like an unpaid internship, it feels like. I feel like
you're giving me experience, yeah,
and showing you how filters work.
Exactly. Yeah, I love when you put filters on my photos.
Yeah,
it just takes them up that next notch.
Exactly. So yeah. Hopefully, over time, you'll be able to learn those tactics.
Slowly, I'm learning.
Yeah. Well, also, Al Pacino at the Oscars, that was a big mistake. You didn't see it. You heard about it secondhand.
I heard
it.
Yeah, I don't
watch the Oscars. I was watching it live. Live.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, whatever. He's used to be cool. Now he's just old, like me, except I never used to be cool. But now I'm just old. But he gets up there and I don't even know. He's like kind of mumbling around and he reads the winner of the best movie, the movie that won the Oscar. No build up. No, like, here's the other nominees. Does that seem
Is that good? Why you guys watched Oppenheimer last night?
I think we were going to anyway, but then that just solidified it just because they won every award.
Yeah, I don't know. It always seems like there's a... At least he didn't call the wrong winner.
No, that's true.
Pretty bad.
No. I wanted... Even though I hadn't seen Oppenheimer, Is it Killian, right?
Yeah.
I like Killian Murphy.
He's good.
I'm a Killian Dick Rider.
That means a fan. Peaky Blinders, isn't he?
Of course. What?
I haven't seen Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, no, that's a great show. I love that show. I've watched it all, every episode, and then started back over, just in case I missed something.
A lot of free time.
Yeah, a lot. Being retired, you know, so all I do is pretty much watch TV now. Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's like the updates. That's kind of the. We'll get everybody up to speed on why you're sitting here.
The first and last time.
Yeah. I mean, we thought about using AI and I was hoping Margot Robbie could be asking me the questions. Yeah. You know, if we can do some voice filter, is there that?
We could probably. I mean, I do a pretty good impression. So.
I mean, you don't sound too dissimilar to her already.
I don't look too dissimilar to her either, so.
Yeah. So that's good. But anyway, so you're the voice in the shadows, except yeah. You're on camera. And
hopefully not too much.
Yeah. And now what's your thoughts for the solo podcast?
I mean, I know I've told you this before, but when I was like 12 or 13, the reason I got into bow hunting is because my dad got your backcountry bow hunting book. And, you know, it was the one that came with the CD. And so we watched the whole thing a bunch of times. And I think I told you that when we met in Hawaii the first time.
Yeah.
So, when you published your book, of course, you know, we had worked together a little bit and I'd listened to it and just came up with questions that maybe people thought the same about or might be interested in hearing your side of the story on. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to kind of hear the story between you and Goggins, how you met, your first workout and what you had heard about him before and what that was like.
Yeah, that's been a very popular video, obviously.
Yeah.
That was sort of like the first lift run shoot, but it wasn't called technically like the series now lift run shoot. And Travis Thompson here in town, he filmed it, him and his buddy. He has a company called Elevation OM. And so I was just like, I needed somebody to capture just the experience of having Goggins here because everybody knows or now knows, but even back then, I'm sure most people knew he was just this badass ex-Navy SEAL. He had, you know, very accomplished ultra runner, held the world record in pull-ups. So it's like this larger than life type figure, been on Rogan.
Right.
I think right before he came here, he was on Rogan and Joe said something like, you know, you guys, you're going to run together. You're going to go see Cam. I heard just make sure that you have a time limit or a distance limit so you guys don't kill each other. And it was, you know, obviously a joke. I don't want to get into a run to the death with Goggins.
Yeah, right.
He gets in a zone. He like, I guess it's sort of like David. He's just in, hey, David, how's it going? Want a coffee? Or Goggins, which is like you throw them raw meat.
Yeah.
So there's two different types. And I saw that firsthand when he came here without knowing what to expect. My first, what I normally do is take people to the hill. And it's like, I'm not good at much, but I've run the hill a lot, right?
Right.
And so we start going up the backside, I can usually tell pretty quick how good a runner somebody is, just like maybe in a few hundred yards. You know, it's like if you see somebody who's never played basketball trying to play basketball, it doesn't take very long,
yeah.
Right? And and you can tell how good they are. But anyway, so same with running. So we take off and I'm like, God dang, he's got a pretty long stride. And he was at this time living, I think, in Nashville. So I'm like, oh, good. There's no hills in Nashville. He's, you know, this is going to be the equalizer. So then we start going up the back power lines there. And his stride didn't seem like it got any shorter. Normally, when you go uphill, you shorten up your stride.
Right.
Because you try to eat up the same amount of ground, the same stride going uphill, you're going to gas out. Well, his stride seemed very similar to on the flat, which I thought was pretty excessive. And again, given I'm like 4'3", so when you my stride is a lot shorter. But we start going up the hill, and he is not fading. And I'm like, dang, this is going to be rough. So we finished that run. He was great. He comes off as this, just the biggest badass ever, which he is, but he's like, just kind of stoic, but fine, you know, cool to hang out with, not like a ton of jokes,
yeah,
and stuff like that, which is whatever. Hey, this is serious shit. It's fun to train with somebody who's going to push you. So I get it. And, we did that run, did a video up on top. I don't think he jumped up on the monument. I got some old footage from that day still. But then we ended up going and we lifted that night. And this was like the kind of like the preemptive strike to our big day the next day. This was a Friday, Saturday. We had a big day planned. It was an ultra marathon in the morning. So 50K turned out being like 34 miles. Then we were going to shoot bows, get him to the bow rack, then out to Wayne's. And then we were going to lift weights and then watch UFC. Seemed like a pretty good day.
Pretty good day.
Yeah. So that was the first day. We just did the run up Pisgah, like a warm up. We were joked that, you know, most people taper before an ultra. No, we're going hard. And then we lifted hard. So that was the first day. Any questions?
No questions at all. So you and him just got connected through Joe. That's how you guys first met? Or how did that come about?
I don't know. I think it was just, I can't remember, sliding in DMs maybe.
So who slid into whose DMs?
I don't want to say he slid into mine because then if I'm wrong, he'll want to kill me. Yeah. But I can't remember. I think it was just probably like, hey, you know, you're badass, whatever type, or just commenting on something. I mean, he doesn't comment on anything. So it must've been me commenting. I was the thirsty follower or whatever they call that. So, I'm not really sure. I think we just kind of knew of each other and then just set up the visit here. And then he went on Joe's right before that.
Okay. So I'm sure people want to know, when's the next Goggins-Haynes workout? You know?
No, but I did see him. I went to his house down there in Vegas. I was down there for a fight. And so I went over to his house. And at that time, I think that was in January or December. Maybe it was December. But at that time, he had something going on with his leg or his knee. And so once he got 100% healthy, he's still running. But it's like, you know, you can go through the motions when you're banged up.
Right.
But that's not the same as actually pushing hard and getting better. So I think he said like in a couple months he'd be good to go. So that's like where I just checked my watch. It's a couple months from then to now. So that was it. But that first one, that was the one where we did the ultra and then the whatever. But the part that gets so much play is, after we did this hundreds and hundreds of reps, burnouts, supersets, all this crazy shit, after running the ultra marathon and shooting the bow and lifting the day before and running the mountain the day before, after all that, then we were going to do a burnout set. Not a burnout set. We're going to do 100 reps supersetted with, so incline, 95 pounds. That's the one thing that catch people off guard. Oh, I know.
It popped into my feed the other day.
Yeah.
There were so many comments like, it's only 95 pounds.
Exactly.
This guy's weak.
I know. So It's context, people, yeah. Context. All but there is no context on quick clips, no. Right? So point is, we had done probably 600 reps before that. And then for that workout, for that little last section, we were doing, I know, curls. So I think 100 curls, or no, maybe like just sets of 20 curls. And then you went to do as many as you could on incline bench with 95 pounds per set to get to 100 reps, right?
Yeah.
And then we did something else in between. I think it might have been skull crushers. So those are the three movements: incline bench, skull crushers, curls. And we were rotating. True, it was working out with us too. And Eric McCormick, my trainer who used to live here and come and train me here, now he lives in Arizona, he was running us through this workout. So he was the one behind David, or behind Goggins at this time. He had switched to Goggins because this is like got pretty serious. He was behind him, and it was funny because the first set of that, I think Goggins did like 20 reps. I did like maybe 23, and I think Truett did 25. So Goggins got the least amount of us, yeah. Right? And after that, and you think, oh, well, you know, nobody gets stronger when they're fatigued. But after that set, he was like, that didn't feel good that me and Truett had done more on that first one. The next ones, he just crushed. And then at the last one, he was like, I think I probably did, man, maybe I could only do 15, maybe 13. I can't remember now, but all I know is where most people would get fatigued, he switched that Goggins mode. And he did, you know, I think with Eric counting that one where he says, who's going to carry the boats? Yeah. Who's going to carry the logs? And all this shit. I think he did like 25 at least. And that was the last set for the 100. And so where we were fading, he was getting stronger. And that's what I tell people. It's like, the race was the same thing. Through 22 miles, we were running together. And then something happened with his shoe and his foot or something like that. So he had to stop. And I said, well, me and Taylor, my brother, we just continue on and just catch up. And normally, if that happens in a race, people are having issues, you never see them again. You know, I mean, right. There's a reason they stop. So they're having something's going wrong. And, but not with him. Sure as anything, he caught up past me, ended up beating me, and was just like in that where most people be fatigued. He got stronger and he was up at the top yelling at nobody with no shirt on. And I was just like, holy shit, this guy's different. This isn't like, you know, you never know with social media, is this real or is this what an act? And that was like, this guy is as real as it gets. So people, they love taking, I don't know, anybody who's successful or well-known, people can take shots at him. And I see some people do, but man, he is a badass. Everything he says or he's going to do, he follows through on. And just tough. I mean, he had a world record, ran 100-mile races 8 weekends in a row, had the pull-up world record. I think he's had, you know, I think 3 world records. So it's like, you can say whatever you want. Fucking Goggins is the man.
Tough to deny that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But hopefully we can put together a pretty cool film of the next workout.
I know. Yeah. Oh, my God. We've had a couple different ones. I went to Vegas one other time when we filmed. We did a 20-mile run. I talked about that in my book. And it's a little bit, you know, I like going on runs by myself because I can, if I get tired, I just walk.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows, no harm, no foul. If I feel good, I run fast. If I planned on running 10 and I run 2 and want to quit, I just quit. So it's like, I also have to be ready for when he shows up because it's like getting ready for the Olympics. It's like, it's not the Olympics, but it feels just as serious.
The senior Olympics.
Oh my, yeah, for me. Yeah, I mean, he is, I think he's 49 now, but fucking, there's some tough old guys out there. And I don't know if you want to call him old or not, but yeah, he's as tough as they come. But I'm a huge Goggins fan. Huge Goggins fan. Love him. Love training with him. Love how he carries himself and how he deals with criticism. He's the man. So yeah, it's going to be a huge honor when he comes back, and hopefully I'll be in shape as well, because if not, I'll be dead.
Yeah, I've never met him. We haven't shot with him since I've been here. So, well, I guess kind of on that same train of thought, along with ultras and everything. I mean, I'd love to hear more of the backstory on some of your hardest ultras, your fastest times. I mean, the other day when Aaron Rodgers was here, you were telling the story about Lance, and mm-hmm. you were talking about how Lance came up and asked you what pace you were running. Mm-hmm. And you were saying, oh, I'm, you know, probably about a 250. And that's, I mean, sub three is fast. So it got my head turning. What's your fastest marathon time?
Fastest was pretty close to that, what I ran in Boston. So to run a 250, you're running 630 miles.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit faster in New York. So, okay. But it was 250 also.
Oh, okay.
So different seconds, like 21 seconds in New York, 42 or something at Boston. And neither one of those courses are considered fast. So I've never been able to touch the 240s, but it's like I've done 250 in two different races that aren't considered fast. So it's like maybe I was in shape for it. That was when I ran with Lance. I was 40, he was 37. So 16 years ago now. I mean, normally you're not getting any faster.
So you're not trying to break that on your next one?
God, I would love to get in the 240s someday. But I don't know, cut out some carbs, lose some weight. I don't know, get some Botox.
Yeah, Tanner's going body. Carb-free now.
I know, he's like about 3 hours in right now. So it's so hard. I mean, I've been trying to limit the carbs because it is crazy. You cut out carbs, you drop fat almost immediately. It's not immediate, unfortunately. It's not 3 hours in, but if you can keep, like what I was doing was carbs in the morning for fuel so I'd have be able to run, and then no carbs afternoon, night. And I was losing, you know, just doing that, you lose fat. So it's, yeah, anyway, I won't talk about diet now, but, as far as running goes, let me think. So that was, yeah, I want to get 240 at some time. I think I'm going to do the Eugene Marathon, but to be honest, I never run fast. I mean, anytime I run with any of these good runners around here, I'm always like, what's our pace? And I never wear a watch, so I never really know. Like sometimes when I get to a race, I never know what pace I'm running until the first mile and there's a clock there. So I'm like, okay, this is what I'm running. And so, yes, mostly by feel. But for Eugene, I'm planning on running Eugene, and I'll be hopefully under three. That's always the goal. So I think to break three, you got to run 6:44s. Which I think I can do. I had me and Ken ride out the other day. He said we were running, I thought he said under sixes for a while, but anyway, so I know my body can do it for a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll continue on with that and hopefully it carries over to Eugene. But yeah, I mean, the good thing about ultras is you're never running that fast. It's mostly just grind it out. That's why it's good for old people.
Right.
Ketone IQ is my podcasting superfood. I'm no Andrew Huberman, so talking for hours actually takes a lot out of my brain power, which I feel like Ketone IQ actually helps with. Ketone IQ is a clean energy boost without caffeine or sugar. It increases your blood ketone. I'm not on a keto diet, but by taking Ketone IQ, I can achieve the desired focus and energy for explosive workouts that ketones typically provide those in ketosis. You can find Ketone IQ at your local Sprouts or online at hvmn.com and use code CAM, C-A-M, for 20% off your first order. I cannot say enough good things about the guys over at Montana Knife Company. I've been using their knives in the mountains for the past 3 years, and I've been nothing but impressed. They're an American company. Their knives are made here in America, and their master bladesmith, Josh Smith, is one of the best knife makers out there. Their culinary cutlery is some of the best I've used, even though I don't use it because I don't cook, but I do use it when I'm eating. But I do know any cook would likely love them in their kitchen. I'm proud to partner with the guys over at Montana Knife and looking forward to some cool new products we're working on collaborating on in the coming months. Head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com today and use code CAM for free shipping.
So, I mean, I know it's happened to a lot of people, some of the greatest, but have you, you know, taken a wrong turn or fucked up pretty bad in an ultra marathon? And
yeah, Yeah, there's some tough ones. You know, it's one time I was running up in Portland Forest Park up there, and it's like there's a lot of homeless people because Portland's so good and our government's so good, and they love to cater to whatever, just kind of support homeless people taking over everywhere. So anyway, there was people living in the park that moved. They had the course flagged. And so you'd get to a junction on the trail, and normally at a junction, they'll have a couple ribbons there hanging, and you know, okay, I got to go this way. So me and this guy, Hal Corner, he's won Western twice, super fast. We were running together, and I can't even remember, but we just ended up bombing down this hill because that's where the ribbons took us. And so there's a couple ribbons right at the junction going downhill. So we go bomb downhill, and then we hadn't seen a ribbon in a while. So we get down at least a mile, maybe a mile and a half. There'd been nobody on this trail. And it's just ending at the bottom of this big draw. And we realized at that time somebody moved the ribbon, just didn't want runners there, were mad, thought it was theirs, whatever. So we start hiking all the way back up and see people going up the ridge. Like now we're in 30th place. We were leading. So we catch all the way up, pass all these people. Again, it happens at another place. And I ended up backtracking, going back and continuing on. I ended up getting fourth. He ended up dropping. He was just so frustrated.
No kidding.
Because an ultra it's hard anyway. You don't want to run an extra step if you can avoid it, right? And so here we'd done extra miles just to run what everybody else is running. And yeah, it was frustrating. But yeah, I got fourth in that. And then there's been times like on my first 200, the Bigfoot 200, Candace Burt puts those races on. I think she does three different 200s. And over 200 miles in the wilderness or in the national forest, you can't be putting ribbons every 10 feet, right? So in a race like that, you might not see a ribbon for half mile, maybe. And I remember running multiple times there, just like you stay on the trail and you're like, okay, unless I missed something, I haven't seen a ribbon in a while, but should still be on this trail, but you never really know. So you're kind of running and you're kind of tentative. And then it's hard because you got to get in a groove. So those 200 miles eventually click off without thinking about every step. So you want to kind of zone out, but you can't zone out because you have to pay attention to the course. So that was a challenge. It was like, I remember I backtracked a few times there, then would go back and like, no, I'm on the right place. Anyway, it's just a whole different part of, I think a lot of people get in those races and they zone out, and then they ended up taking like a wrong trail, and then they're miles down there. And there's no other, in the middle of the night, over a course of 200 miles, when you're in the mountains, you're by yourself. If you went a couple of miles off the course, you're already by yourself because there's 200 miles to get for like 150 runners to get spread out.
Right.
But then when you're off the course, it's like, you know, there's been had to be rescues and different things like that. And it's a big part. It's not quite like Barkley Marathon is where they don't have it marked and you have to make your own map. It's not quite like that, but it's not. Definitely not like a road marathon that you know exactly where you're going. But yeah, I mean, with ultras, that's always part of the equation, it seems like. Yeah. So
we were watching that documentary the other night. What was that called? On that ultra. It's like a last man standing thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know, we were kind of talking about films and videos we could do. So uh-huh. Do you have your eyes on any in the future? Or
films?
No, ultras.
Oh, ultras. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, you know, you always think you're in shape, but then when you're in a race, you always push more. So it's right. Like you have to do those. I mean, there's a couple local ones I know I'll do, but I'm sure you're talking about the big ones.
Any, I think. I would think people just want to hear what you're kind of looking forward to.
I don't know. I'm always like, never really know if I'm in good shape until I do a race. So when I do Eugene Marathon, or like there's a 50K here I usually do. It's called, what is that called? Not frozen trail. Shotgun trail blast. Yeah, it's another 50K. I got second last year. My brother won. Usually I do that. So after I do a couple of those, like kind of shorter marathons, then I'll be like, okay, we'll see. If I struggle and it's terrible, then I'm like, you know, make up some, oh, I got to go on a hunt. I would do that race, but I'm not going to be around. So yeah, it's, I never really know. I mean, I try to put in miles. I try to get in, you know, 10 miles a day, 70 miles a week, good base, build that up. If I'm doing a 200, wanting to be, you know, definitely over 100 miles a week. And so this time of year, that's just kind of like the building phase. And then we'll see what happens. Where I enjoy, I like racing. I like competing. They're so painful. Really sucks, but I almost enjoy like big adventures like Courtney and I have done. And when she came here, we did 100K here, so we ran 62 or 63 miles that day when me and Goggins get together. But Courtney and I have run, you know, that day we did 60 some, we've run 60 some miles before. We ran 47 in the Grand Canyon. So to me, I got to gear up just to train with her. So that's like, you know, that's my big goal. Right. Like just make it to where I'm not, you know, she's not waiting for me. And that's, if I can do that, then I'm like, okay, I'm in shape. If I can make her get half of a half-assed workout. But yeah, I mean, as far as races, you know, Cocodono 250 is, I've never done that. They said I could run that one. But that's early in the year.
Yeah.
And, I gotta be ready for that. So we'll see. I mean, I got some good ultra stories though, if you want.
Yeah. Let's talk about them. I mean, why not?
Oh man. It's supposed to make you smart. I said, it makes you smart on my, I don't know what I was listening to, but one of the ad reads I did, I mentioned I'm not Andrew Huberman, and this doesn't make me him either, but it might make me less of a whatever, seem less challenged. Yeah, one thing that stands out to me in ultras is, you know, and this is hard to think about all the time, but I remember at that first 200, my brother was pacing me, Taylor Spike, you know, great runner, super tough, wins races. He's got third at Tahoe twice. The Tahoe 200's got third twice. He ran, Courtney got beat there once. Sky beat her. She still ran a good race, but got beat, and then Taylor got third. So he was quite a ways back from them, but still third.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. So anyway, he's a good runner. But I remember my first 200, I was a little bit ahead of him on the 100s, 200s, ultras. He came, you know, after I started. But we were 130 miles in, middle of the night, kind of, I think it was pissing rain, could have been snow mixed in because we were pretty high. And, you know, headlamp, when it's cloudy and you're in the mountains, if you turn your headlamp off, it is like you're inside a closet. I mean, it is so freaking dark, right?
Are you trying to say I would know what that's like?
No, I mean, you're out of the closet, obviously. And God bless you. I mean, I'm not just going to support you. So it's fine.
I walked myself into that.
Hey, I said, give me some meatballs today. Yeah. So
there it was.
I saw that coming. It's just, you know,
teed it up for it.
Yeah. Now. I got the hips into it and set that over the fence. But anyway, so it was like pitch black, dark, piss and rain, 130 miles in. So obviously you're kind of fatigued. And I remember stopping there and saying, you know, looking at him going, how lucky are we to be right here, right? This is why we do it. We do stuff like this to be in the middle of the night, 130 miles in and still pushing. That is not very many people do that. No. Or have to. I mean, so I told him, I said, we got to feel lucky. This is, it doesn't get any better than this. It's like we're very few people would be, and we're there, and we're not wallowing in our misery, still upright, good attitudes, and pushing. And I'll never forget that moment. It was it's hard to think about that sometimes, or it's hard to recapture that type of those feelings. But, you know, because you go on your little run and you're like, you know, want to do a 5-mile run and you get a side ache at 3 miles and you walk home. And so you need to have those little wins and remember those, like, God, I have done hard things. I know I can do it. I'm being a pussy right now on this run. But so it's nice having those little wins. But I remember, you know, and there was another one at Moab. We were both doing the Moab 240. We were kind of arguing about something, because it happens. People get pissed off at each other when you're fatigued, right? And I just took off. And I'm like, well, whatever. If he gets his shit squared away, he'll catch up. And it was miles and hours. And then I think finally we caught back up together and went back together. But there's always these ups and downs. But all I know is that, you know, your brother, you have a little bit more of a connection, but we've had those ups and downs and still love racing and training. And, you know, he paced me at, not Bighorn. It was a Crazy Mountain 100, which is in the crazies there in Montana, which I think that, you know, that country. And we've just had just so many, like, I don't know, it just seems like those are the memories that matter. And we've shared a lot of them in the mountains and doing hard things. And when I think about ultras, I always think about my brother Taylor and then things we've experienced. And it's hardly ever the finish line that I think about. It's always the challenges during the race.
Right.
The finish is, it's kind of like, you know, I look at these kills and I think about, you know, that worked out. I got that bull killed, but it's not the kill that I think about. It's the hunt and how, it's just weird how people think you are obsessed or consumed with the result, but it's not the result. It's the journey. And right. It sounds cliche, but it's true. I mean,
yeah. So on these 240 mile ultra marathons, you know, obviously there's a point where it becomes physically the hardest and a point where it becomes mentally the hardest. Do those usually coincide with each other, or do they happen at different times, and which one's harder?
Yeah, no, it's like whatever challenge you can envision facing, you usually do. And it's, and they're both like seem at times insurmountable. And then, I mean, I've told this story before. I remember on letsrun.com, they're ripping me apart for, you know, saying I was lying about something, but whatever. Maybe I was, I don't have a watch, but there's times when, you know, it's like you can barely get a mile done in 20 minutes. It is just, you know, I remember being at that first 200, the Bigfoot, and I was with these guys that did it before, and we had a 10-mile section. Hard section, 5,000 foot of gain. It was, you know, 100 degrees during the day. That storm, I can't remember if it was before or after the storm that went through that one night I was talking about. But anyway, point is we had, it was the latter half of the race. Maybe, I think it was the morning after that night I just explained where we were at 130 miles. So it might've been like 160 miles. And we had this 20-mile section, and they said, you know, make sure you got plenty of water. We're getting geared up at this aid station to take off in this next little segment. And I said, what are you figuring for time on this, you know, for these 10 miles? And he's just like, oh, you know, just figure 2 miles an hour. And if you can beat that, that's good. And I was just like, I mean, 2 miles an hour, right, is not fast.
No.
And so there's times where if you can do it, that's a 30-minute mile. So there's times when a 30-minute mile is hard. And then same race, at the end of that race, Taylor was pacing me, and I was running so well. I changed my shoes, feet were a mess, but I was running so well. He said, I don't know if I can keep up. And he hadn't been running the whole race. He was just pacing me in these different sections at night than this last section. And he said he didn't know. And I was running like 6-something minute miles. And so there's time, and that's not the time where the less run people, but I did another time where in the Moab 240, where I said I ran like 7-minute miles for the stretch. And I mean, it was slightly downhill. Taylor was again behind me. He would verify this, but the point is, it's like whether it's 6-minute miles at the end of Bigfoot or 7-minute miles of Moab, there's times when where it didn't seem like you could take another step to where now all of a sudden you're running good and fluid, same body,
right?
Same mind, same what, so why? Why are you wallowing in misery in one section and then, you know, I wouldn't say running like no issue, but when you can open up and run again, that's a special feeling. And so I've had that up and down, and it's like, I think the mind is what controls all that, because with an ultra, there's three things that matter. It's fuel. So are you getting calories? It's hydration. Are you staying hydrated? And salt. If you got calories, water, and salt, your body can go a long way. It's your mind that'll fuck you up. And so, but if you keep giving yourself all those things, eventually your mind will go through, and whatever peaks and valleys you got to get to, the mind will get you there if you keep pushing. But a lot of people get to that valley and then they quit, and then they throw in the towel, and they never knew that, hey, there was a peak coming. You were going to be flying, feeling great. And the miles were going to be coming way easier than they are now. So it's, as long as you're giving your body what it needs and those three things that I talked about. And another thing is your feet, because your feet can be a mess. I mean, but it's weird too, because there's people who will quit because of a blister. And then in that first Bigfoot 200, I'll remember this, you know, till my dying day, but we were there at the last aid station. I think we had about maybe 20 or no, I think the last aid station was 13 miles, but maybe at the 20 mile mark left in the race, there's this woman, and she took off her shoes and her socks, and her bottom of her foot had a big crack in it, like down lengthways down her foot, a big gaping crack. Had like trench foot just from getting wet and then dry and then, you know, being wet the whole time. And so you look at that and I'd be like, okay, not many people would finish a race, but she did. I think she won the women's.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's weird. A blister on somebody's pinky toe can take them out. But this woman had a crack down her foot and is, hey, it's good to go. So it's crazy what our minds can do. But again, giving your body what it needs, you ride out those valleys and it's incredible the fight some people have. And it's like, if you're listening to this and you think, well, that's not me, I wouldn't be so sure. I think a lot of people have some big fight in them and they just never really tap into it. But you take on huge challenges where it's like, am I going to quit or am I going to push? And then you push, then all of a sudden you start feeling better. Then that gives you confidence. And then the next time you're like, oh, I've been here before. I pushed through and it was fine. So then you just keep building on those. And then your confidence, you know, skyrockets. So Right. It's, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a roller coaster. The ultra is just like anything that's worthwhile, any hunt, anything that we face in life that's, you know, meaningful, there's going to be ups and downs. Right. And ultras are just like kind of that, you know, it's like life's challenges in just a short period of time, like 2 or 3 days. And it's just like, this is how life works, ups and downs, push through, get to the finish line, celebrate. But yeah, it's tough sometimes in that moment.
Yeah. So in your book, you talk about, you know, being a 5-year-old running to school.
Yeah.
Did Taylor always run from a young age as well, or?
No, he what did he do? God, I was old. No, I'm 10 years older than him. So okay. He was 7, and, you know, I never lived at home after I was 17. So it's, or moved out when I was 17. So I was like not around at all. And he did like motocross, probably soccer. I don't know. I wasn't around.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what the hell he did. I would come and pick him up and take him. If I had a big buck spotted, I was bow hunting, but I'd always be out looking. If I had a big buck spotted, I'd go find him wherever he was, pull him out of school one time and take him up there. And he killed some bucks doing that. But other than that, I was like non-existent.
So where did that inspiration come from when you were so young to run to school?
To run?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know, probably pain, you know? I mean, my mom and dad got divorced and I probably wanted, I wanted my dad to pay attention, but I just wanted to be acknowledged maybe for doing something that other kids weren't doing, which I did get acknowledged for that because I was like a complete little fuck up in class. And so I was on red light, green light, which means every day I'd either get a piece of red paper, like a construction paper, or a piece of green construction paper. And so if it was a bad day, it was a red light, good day, green light, and I'd have to bring that home and that would, you know, be how it was. So I was like, I think I just ran. I just knew my dad, you know, was an athlete and he cared about that. So I was 5 in the first grade and just wanted to, get some approval probably. That's why I started. Yeah.
And, you said your dad's an athlete. I know he was a runner and somewhat of a legend around here. Where does that all start?
I don't know how it started. Maybe the same sort of circumstance for him. I mean, he was just always an athlete, always around, but his dad got killed when he was 3. So his dad got shot up in Seattle. So he didn't have a dad around. So it was my grandma Halois, which was his mom. She was a school teacher. She raised him. And I think she was, you know, probably had him in sports. Just that's what, you know, moms do. Cause right. It's like these boys have so much energy and they, you know, it's hard for a woman to raise a young man on their own. And so he was always at the track, always very gifted athletically, good jumper, good vaulter, very good at gymnastics. And so he ended up, you know, going through Junior Olympics, won all sorts of stuff there. And Eugene has always been, the track capital of the world, basically. So it's always been that, or not always, but I mean, for a long, 50 years for sure, 60 years. And so he was just immersed in that track scene from a kid all the way up until when he died. You know, he coached track for many, many, many years. But so that was just what he did. He got a full ride scholarship at Oregon for gymnastics. And then that didn't work out, it's just tough. It's tough for a young man with the family. I was born, he was married, you know, whatever. So I ended up having to go to Oregon State after Oregon on a track scholarship. And then, you know, that didn't work out either. So he got into coaching after a while and then was able to pour himself into that and really had made a big impact on, you know, a bunch of kids in the area, taught them how to win state championships. So that was good.
Mm. So, what lessons or things you want to do like him or don't want to do like him do you still use to this day?
He loved helping people. What I remember is I don't remember a ton from when I was a kid. You know, like I said, they were divorced and, you know, my stepdad was around. And so it was like kind of a weird situation. But what I remember about him mostly is when he was coaching at South and like how much he loved those kids and how much he cared about helping the kids. Charlie and Lindsay Beard were two that he talked about all the time. And I think they both won state championships at South and the pole vault. And, that was with his coaching. So he, you know, just having a positive impact on kids is, or just people in general, because everybody mentions or everybody knows, I don't know, Coach Haynes, Coach Bob. Some people would call him Beach Boy Bob because he left the Beach Boys, and he was just like this music aficionado. And he, you know, I think it's just like passion, and just he wouldn't know how to be fake. It was always, he was just always real with people and genuine and cared. And so if I can take anything from him, it would be that. It would be, you know, have an impact on people, let them know you care and you love them. And, you know, I don't know. That's, you know, when I think of my dad, that's what I think of. I think him and his, you know, coaching windbreaker from Purple Windbreaker from South, and his Axeman track hat, and, you know, always wore shorts. And, you know, it was like, yeah, he was just, that's just what he did. Had a whistle, and I think I'd probably a stopwatch or something like that. But yeah, I was looking at, before we started talking about this, I was looking at, there's an old article, and this is written by Kip Leonard, who went to South also. He was I think like a federal judge here in town for a long time. But he wrote this about my dad back in, I don't know when this was, probably late 60s. But it says, a new era in track and field is upon the world. Everywhere, goals once thought to be impossible to achieve are being surpassed. Such accomplishments are the 4-minute mile, 7-foot high jump, 17-foot pole vault, and most recently, the 70-foot shot putt. High school track marks, also thought to be out of reach, are falling by the wayside as better trained athletes move in, such as the case with junior pole vaulter Bob Haynes. So this is when he's a junior at South. It says, this spring, he cleared 8 inches over the old school record and surpassed the state record by 1/4 of an inch. Although, yeah, let's see. Bob is very consistent, will be a strong contender for the state title. The wiry athlete attributes much of his success to gymnastics, a sport in which he placed second in floor exercise in this year's state meet. Gymnastics is a great help, Bob comments. Such events as a trampoline and work on the apparatus develops body control, and all the work builds up strength, which is essential to vaulting. So, yeah, then it continues on here. It was not until the summer of his 7th grade year that Bob took up pole vaulting. Up until then, he had limited his track interest in high jump and hurdles. In 8th grade, I just messed around with the vault. I think I went about 9 or 10 feet and concentrated mostly on high jumping. As a 9th grader, Bob gave more time vaulting, clearing 11 feet, and also high jump 5'6". So it ended up, he ended up being, you know, just incredible vaulter and jumper and everything. And I remember they told him he had a 6'4" high jump, and he's only a little bit under 6 foot, which is a good jump. But he did what was called the Western roll, which means you got the bar here and your stomach kind of follows it over, and you just kind of jump and roll over the bar, as opposed to the Fosbury flop, which is, he jumped against Dick Fosbury, who invented the back to the bar, and then you kick your legs over. And that was how these jumpers were getting higher. So they, at Oregon State, they told my dad that they could add 8 to 12 inches to his jump, changing it from the Western roll to the Fosbury flop. And at 6'4", so if he adds 8 inches, it's 7 foot, and, you know, a foot is 7'4", obviously. And anyway, it didn't work out, but point is, he had a lot of potential for jumping. Dick Fosbury went on and won the Olympic gold medal at, I think, in Mexico City. And yeah, so I mean, he did implement that strategy, and you know, I think that was a world record at the time, whatever his jump was, to win that gold. So pretty exciting. It's kind of cool, you know, to read those old things about my dad. But, you know, one other thing that there's another article that when he died, yeah, this one says, Axeman track coach dies at 62. Yeah, long time South Eugene High School track and field coach Bob Haynes died of cancer Monday at the age of 62. The 1966 South Eugene graduate, who ranked 7th in school history in the pole vault at 15 feet and coached the Axeman for 22 years, focusing on the pole vault and jumps. He was an inaugural inductee into the school's athletic hall of fame. Yeah, this is where those Beard siblings that I mentioned, Lindsey Beard won that OSAA class 6A girls pole vault title in 2006 or 2007, 2008, and her brother Charlie ranked sixth in 6A with a clearance of 16.5. So those, you know, those were the kind of impact he had on kids. But they had, like, the local paper here had this article on him, which is when he died. And, you know, as they say, when you die, well, I think the fear is, like, will anybody notice or care, right? Yeah. I mean, you want to go through life and you want to make that impact like I talked about. And, you know, just making sure people, you've made a positive, you've had a positive influence on others. Man, that's a measure of success to me, and that your family knows that you loved them and everything else. But
yeah, I mean, what do they say? You die twice, right?
Yeah.
You die once when you pass away, and you die again when people stop talking about you.
Right. The last time somebody mentions your name. Yeah. Right. So that's why, you know, I've done this with Roy. I'm glad you had, you know, these questions on here to talk about my dad too, because it's like, that is how you keep that legacy alive and keep their memory alive. And it, you know, in that regard, there's this article and it says Beach Boy Bob left an indelible mark at South. And this was in the Register Guard here, is the only big paper we have in town. But it says the obituary ran in Thursday's edition in 5 paragraphs and 142 words. We learned that Robert L. Bob Haynes of Eugene died on Monday of cancer. He was 62. But who was Bob Haynes? It's impossible to encapsulate in an obit. Not in a column either. And beyond the facts, there's no good way to measure a life's impact. How to explain to somebody known as Beach Boy Bob or Bob the Badger, nicknames bestowed because of one of his life's passions and the aggressive way he attacked obstacles. How best to describe the heartbeat of South Eugene High athletic department, a coach who was much more to his athletes. How to describe someone who is much more in general. Tell a couple of stories, maybe some memories from those who knew him. But let's start here with Bob's wife, Candy. His passion overflowed, she says, and can't say much more. There's also, yeah, so it's like when I think of my dad, just like that was my stepmom, Candy, said that his passion overflowed. So when anybody thinks of my dad, that's what they think of. And I think if, you know, you mentioned this earlier, if you can take anything from a man like that, whether it's your dad or anybody else, if they have that passion overflowing in them, that's a great trait, you know, because people got to know you care. Or right. do you care about anything, right? Some people don't know what their passion is, but when you have passion for life and no matter what you pour yourself into, it's evident, that's a win. So that's, to me, that's what my dad was. And, that's what I, you know, if I could, I don't know, use that as a measuring stick for success. That's my goal.
Mm, that's a great way to look at it.
Thank you, James Gideon. Anything else?
I think that's all I had written down. I mean, yeah, I feel like I got all my questions answered.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. Well, I kind of like this. I mean,
maybe we can field some questions from the viewers. I can go through comments and.
Do we have any viewers in here?
I just mean on this episode. Oh. You know, maybe if people like it, they can.
I'm always trying to rope Tanner into partaking, but he never wants to.
I know, he's got the microphone, so.
He does. He could chime in anytime. Maybe we'll just wait.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I mean, I think probably next time I'll ask you questions.
I don't have anything to say, so, yeah.
Okay, well, we might find out live on air, but thanks, James. This will be a little bonus. You know, we just had Aaron Rodgers here, which was incredible. Feedback's been great on that. Good job on filming.
Oh, thanks.
You know, James is the one who, with Tanner's help, filmed the lift run shoot, and then James edited the episode everybody's enjoying right now, so that was pretty cool. And then we have Remy Warren coming up, so this is like in between. We're taking Joe Rogan's approach, and we're flooding the market with podcasts. So this will be a bonus one in between, but maybe we'll start doing these on a regular basis.
Yeah, Maybe.
All right. Thank you. We'll catch you guys next time. Keep hammering. Leupold Optics has been providing my binoculars and eyewear for the last few years. I like that it's an Oregon company and they make such high quality glass. That's all I've really used. And if you can't find what you're hunting, it's going to be tough to kill. So Leupold Optics has really played an integral part in my success these last few years. Thank you, Leupold, for supporting the podcast. Hey guys, now this one is pretty cool. Mountain Ops is giving away not just a cold plunge, but a sauna to one lucky winner. The giveaway is in honor of two new flavors of Ignite, Fiery Pineapple and Glacier Ice. You don't even need to make a purchase to enter the giveaway, but if you do buy either new flavor, you get extra entries for the giveaway. You can also snag 20% off of those flavors by using code CAM at checkout. That's C-A-M. The giveaway ends the 29th, so you better go enter now. Ignite is a healthier version of an energy drink. So when I'm trying to be healthy, I replace my Monsters with Ignite, and the new flavors are two of my favorites. Head to mountainops.com to enter the giveaway for free and use code CAM at checkout for 20% off your entire purchase. The giveaway ends February 29th, so go enter now.